commandments are there to help remind us of what to be focused on through the living of a good and whole life. So when we break one of the commandments, we usually cause harm and heartache to everyone involved, including ourselves. So I don't want to make light of this passage. But what is interesting about this, and what is also interesting about this particular story of Jesus, is that it was originally left out of the Gospel of John, which is where the only place this story is told. Which means that the scribes and the editors of the Gospel, when they were writing and rewriting the Gospel, they struggled over whether or not to tell this story. And some of the earliest manuscripts omit the story altogether. Even when we were doing our Bible study class and we were looking at this story this week, in one of the Bibles that we were reading, it was completely passed over. It wasn't in there. So many biblical scholars have decided, you know, do we leave it in? Is it authentic? Or do we leave it out? But I think it's very important that out of the 1,400 earlier manuscripts, only 200 and some leave it out, which says to me that the earlier writers and scribes felt this story needed to be told and that it probably had some basis, that this interaction between Jesus and this woman probably happened, that it is an historical story. And it's first preached about by a priest in the 300s and by Leo the Great, a bishop and a pope, in the 400s, and Augustine also mentions it. And if you would ask people today who have never read the Bible or maybe even ever darkened the door of a church, they could quote probably two quotes from this story from the mouth of Jesus without even knowing its context. Go and sin no more, and those who are without sin cast the first stone. So it obviously touches our hearts in a very palpable way. So let's delve into the importance of this story for our time and our place. First of all, it's a very dramatic story. You can imagine for a moment that you are the woman who has made the mistake. And I want you to imagine the shame of that experience, of being publicly exposed and humiliated, the whole community knowing your dirty laundry. And if that's ever happened to you, I know your heart is with this woman. And according to the law of Moses, in Deuteronomy 22, 22 to 24, which the Pharisees are basing their testing on Jesus with, it determines that both the man and the woman caught in adultery are to die. And to be stoned to death, in particular, if the young woman is a virgin. So while the Mosaic law dictates both the man and the woman are to be condemned to death, first of all, I'm not actually sure if anyone ever acted on that law, because the Jewish people under the Roman Empire would not have the authority to execute anyone. So I don't think this law was ever lived out, certainly not in Jesus' time. And in this story, it is only the woman who is brought before Jesus. And so that was the first question of our Bible study group. Where's the man? Takes two to commit adultery. So that's the first injustice that happens here. We also don't know the circumstances that led to this moment. We don't know if this was an act of love between a woman and her lover, or if this woman was being forcibly compelled into this act. We don't know if this woman felt unloved or uncared for by her husband and sought refuge in another man. Or we don't know if this woman was a widow. We don't know anything about this woman. All we know is that the crowd around Jesus are out for stoning. But Jesus' response to the story is not about knowing the law or acting on it. Jesus' response is one of challenge to the people who have brought this woman to him. His response is all about self-reflection. Self-reflection for the men who have gathered around her to stone her, and self-reflection for the woman on her motivation in doing this. Because for Jesus, it's always about the heart. It's always about compassion rather than condemnation. Brené Brown, in all of her books, talks a lot about how we human beings carry a lot of shame in our lives. We've made mistakes that we are not happy with. We carry resentments and hurts from the past. And those are wounds in us that are gaping. And it's usually the pain of those wounds that work on us to make us condemning of others who make the same or different mistakes. So Jesus asks us to check our hearts, to know the hearts of another. I want to share with you a story that I've never forgotten, and it's about a woman that I met many years ago when I was studying to be a student chaplain in Peterborough, the Civic Hospital in Peterborough. And this woman, so that week I was scheduled to go to the psychiatric ward of the hospital, which it turned out to be my favorite ward in a hospital. And I think that's because people in that ward have been through a lot. You don't usually go to a psychiatric ward unless you've been deeply wounded in your life. And so I experienced people in the ward as very real and authentic and raw. And they're there because they've been hurt, wounded by life. And so when I went to visit this woman, every time I noticed someone would walk past her door, she would spit. And I thought, well, that's a strange response. So I met with this woman, and I asked her how she was. And the reason why she was there is because she was struggling from a mental illness. She had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And she told me the story of her life. She said that she and her husband, she'd been married to her husband for many years. They had many children. They were Roman Catholic. And she discovered one day that her husband was harming their children, sexually harming all of their children. So she went to her priest looking for help. And her priest said, go and have another child. So she did what the priest said. They had another child, and the same thing happened. So finally she couldn't take it anymore, and she left her husband, and she divorced him. And then she met a wonderful man who was loving and kind and respectful of her and of her children. So she went back to the priest and asked to be married to him. And the priest refused, saying she would be committing adultery if she married this good man. So she didn't. She didn't marry this man. And she ended up in this psychiatric ward because of all the harm she saw her first husband do to her children, and then the priest harming her further by denying her her happiness and freedom and joy, and by making her out to be a sinful woman. So she was denied of that joy. So I always think, when I read this story of the woman caught in adultery, I always think of her. Now, not knowing her circumstance, not knowing what led to this condemnation. So I think Jesus is reminding, Jesus doesn't go and he doesn't interview her, he doesn't take an intake on her life, he doesn't find out her life story. It's immaterial to Jesus. What's important to Jesus is that he teaches about compassion. He teaches about self-reflection. He teaches us about honoring ourselves. So he teaches the crowd. To the crowd, he says, those who are without sin cast the first stone of judgment, of condemnation. And to the woman, he says, go and don't betray yourself again. Go and honor yourself. Go and don't allow yourself to be a victim. Go with self-respect and honoring. Neither do I condemn you. Neither do I shame you. Has anyone here condemned you? Neither do I shame you. This is between you and God. The church has been horrendously a place of judgment and condemnation historically. And I think because the church has been so good at condemning people, that's why it's hard for people to go to church. That's why young people don't come to church, because historically the church has been a place of condemnation. Instead of understanding Jesus' stories of compassion, we have turned them into condemnation, and I never understand it. This past week, it was in my face all week, this interplay between condemnation and compassion. So this week, I was invited to go to the Christian Fellowship Church in Qualicum, that one when you're going off on Village Way. And they were having a gathering to discuss SOGI 1, 2, 3. And I found out, I went to the gathering, I thought they've probably made a mistake in inviting me, but I'm going to go anyway. And I called some folks who were from the Affirm team here, and so a couple people came with me. So there were three of us there from Knox to hear what they had to say. There were about 30 people there. Three speakers, and they were going to speak for 3 hours. It's going to be long. The first speaker got up, and SOGI is Sexual Orientation Gender Identity. It's a new resource for teachers to help children that are being bullied in a class. Let's say a child may be suffering from gender dysphoria. They don't know. It might be a boy, and he might wear a dress one day to school, or he might wear pants. He's not sure about his identity. It's a resource to help teachers and children understand children and the diversity in which they live. So this group was gathering together to protest this resource package being in the schools. And the first speaker got up, and he was about anti-everything. He was, unless you were male, white, or Christian, pretty much you were under condemnation. The three of us, after an hour, had to get up and walk out. It was so hateful, so condemning. Everything that was coming out of his mouth was condemning Muslims, condemning Hindus, condemning homosexuals. It was pretty horrific. And we left so grateful for Knox United Church and for the love that this congregation shows toward diversity. And it made me realize how important this congregation is to this community, that we can speak up for the rights of children, for the rights of people, to be on the side of love rather than condemnation. Then I was also this week invited to a conversation with the mayor and two counselors about the supportive housing project. The mayor invited all of the ministers and clergy in Parksville, Qualicum, to come and talk about the supportive housing project. And we were given excellent information that I have that I need to photocopy to make available to anyone who wants to read it, because they're getting a lot of pushback against the housing project. And he said the main fear is that people in this area don't want homeless people they don't want to attract homeless people to this community, and they're afraid that their housing, their market value of their homes are going down. And he said, all of these questions are answered. All of these myths that are circulating need to be talked about. So he said, please go back to your people and talk about the supportive housing project. And if you are supportive of this project and bringing homes to those who are homeless and those on the about to be homeless, please talk about it with your congregations. And if you are supportive, please write letters, because only the negative letters are coming in. And it was interesting having a meeting with our social justice and outreach team. And one of the people from that team had written a letter on behalf of Knox, on behalf of council, supporting the supportive housing project, and it wasn't printed in the paper. So that was interesting. Hopefully it'll be in next week or next time. But here we have that interplay between judgment and condemnation and compassion. We have it in our story, and we have it every day in our lives. And this week, we have also, Knox has been confronted with this interplay this week when a homeless woman came to Knox and she asked for our help. She came in December, and she was living in a tent in Rathtrevor, and she was homeless except for living in this tent, and she asked for help. So Jerry Garnett, the chair of our council, and I went, and we gave her some food vouchers from our minister's discretionary fund. And then last week she came again and said, I'm still in this situation. Can you help me? So I'm going to ask Allison Stewart to come forward. Allison is co-team lead of our social justice and outreach team. And she's going to share a little bit about Tina.
I just want to say that before I begin, to remind you that there is a chant that we occasionally sing at Knox during prayers that goes, where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there. I am there. And on Friday, Jennifer, on her day off, called seven of us to gather with her in his name to meet Tina, the homeless woman who she mentioned. A few days ago, Tina called Jennifer because she had been evicted from her present camping site in Rathtrevor Park. She had nowhere to go. There are rules about how long one can stay in Rathtrevor, even though there are many empty spaces there available at that time of year. She had no place to live. Tina has been clean from drugs for 10 years and has lived on the street since she was 11 years old. So for now, there is a silver Pathfinder SUV parked behind the church on church property. It belongs to Tina, and that's where she and her dog have spent the last few nights. It is not perfect, but she is safe. She has a very large tent, which she would love to pitch on a farm or in an acreage somewhere in exchange for doing work on that property until she could get into the supportive housing in Parksville. Jennifer called our social justice and outreach team to think of ways we could help. Two other caring women joined us to meet with Tina, and it was determined that because she has no address, no birth certificate, no social insurance number, no status papers, she is Métis, and she can't file taxes, she cannot receive government assistance. In their eyes, she doesn't exist. Our aim is to see that she gets free legal help so she can get to work on some of those issues, to help her get those papers that are needed. She will hopefully start by approaching SOS to see if she can get help from them. In the meantime, for her food and personal supplies, Tina currently depends mainly on what she can find in dumpsters. She is shocked but grateful for the huge amount of food that is thrown out into these dumpsters by grocery stores and drug stores. She also finds food for her dog there. Paying for gas for her car to access these supplies is a big problem. Donated money from the glass jar on the counter in the office helped to pay for gas for her to get here from Trath Trevor. Tina is independent, resourceful, and proud. Her needs are few. She is willing to work for people, doing chores, mowing lawns, chopping wood, gardening. She spends much of her time cleaning our beaches. She voluntarily picks up garbage, packs it in big bags, and leaves it by the garbage sites for dumpsters to pick up. If you see her Jeep parked behind the church, know that it is temporary, that we are proud of the fact that Knox can show kindness and compassion to a woman in need. And if you know anyone who might be able to help her in any way with employment or any or accommodation or a place to set up her large tent, she would be grateful. In closing, remember Brandon and Shannon, who lived in their camper in our parking lot over here for a few weeks a year ago? You'll be happy to know that they're settled now in a mobile home in Errington, and the services they offer are still listed in our Knox Weekly. And a reminder about the glass jar for donations. It is there to be used to help people in need, and Tina is definitely one of those. Perhaps you have some loose change that you could drop in there. Thank you for listening.
One of the other interesting messages that comes out of this scripture that Mary Ellen read for us today was accidentally skipped over in the beginning because it moves from chapter 6 into chapter 7. But it begins, the story that we studied in the Bible study begins with, when all of the other disciples went to their homes, Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. And while I was researching for this sermon, it came out that this is a story about Jesus' homelessness also. Foxes have dens and birds have nests. But the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head, said Jesus. Jesus was a homeless person. He relied on the compassion and care of other people, going to Martha and Mary's home, going to Peter's mother-in-law's home, going to Zacchaeus' home to be fed. Just a thought for today, as we're dwelling on the idea, the concept, the invitation to be compassionate. Thank you, Knox United Church, for being a place of compassion in this community, for being a place that loves those who might be considered outcast and brings them into community and loves them with all your hearts. May it be so. May it continue to be so. Amen.